Across the publishing industry, everyone is proudly declaring independence. Authors have cut ties with publishers and agents and found success in more than 50 shades. Determined to survive in their brick-and-mortar forms, indie booksellers are fighting for their rights in court. And at least one public library system has created a platform for independence in e-books. Hello, and welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series, Beyond the Book. I'm Chris Keneally, your host. The meteor that is digital technology has hit the book world with a vengeance. It's no fun for the dinosaurs and other giants, but the little ones are celebrating. Joining me to review the latest world news in books is Andrew Albany, senior writer, Publishers Weekly. He joins me every Friday. And Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, yes, it's a world of independence, those little creatures that have been lumbering around for many years, but now finally seem to be having their day. And we've got a lot of news items there. Things are getting smaller, even at the top, of course, as the Big Six is about to become the Big Five in a matter of months. But really, it's the vibrancy of the independent publishing industry that we're going to talk about today. And Monday's issue, you've got some articles that highlight that trend.
That's right. Monday's issue is jam-packed with signs of life and signs of success, I should say, for indies, whether bookstores or booksellers, bookstores or publishers, I should say, and also libraries. And first up in our main feature, we have a look at the fastest growing indie publishers, and I'm happy to report that there has indeed been some significant success for indie publishers over the last 2 years. What's pacing that growth? Well, you won't be surprised. It's higher ebook sales, expansion into new markets, the ability to leverage social media, and also the ability to leverage the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey. Once again, here we are talking about 50 Shades, which I have to say has put as big a footprint on the publishing business as any book I can remember in my publishing career. Certainly, I believe it's in league with Harry Potter in terms of its impact across the board. So, you know, some highlights from that feature, you know, back-to-back years of solid gains have seen a 96% sales increase for Soho Press. A 55% of those of its total sales now are digital in 2012. So that's a pretty awesome number. Other press saw a 95% increase in sales between 2010 and 2012. That was led by a very strong 2012 when its revenue jumped 69%. Again, ebooks were a big part of that. They accounted for 40% of the house's sales. Chelsea Green also reports a banner year in 2012. The company saw growth in both ebooks and print, with print sales actually up 34% over the last 2 years. And Ulysses Press followed a strong 2011 with a solid 2012. And the list goes on. There's much, much more in the feature, including a range of facts and figures and more publishers, and also commentary and observations from the publishers themselves. And you can check that full feature out in Monday's issue.
Well, indeed, you mentioned about the booksellers at the top there, and they gathered last week in Kansas City, and they had to surmount not only business challenges, but they had to surmount a blizzard to get there.
That's right. You know, we talked about it last week a little bit, as the blizzard was just starting to hit, and I have to say, it's amazing to see the efforts everyone made to get to Kansas City for the Winter Institute, and it sounds like, you know, weather aside, which sounds like it was brutal, the meeting came off really, really well. Of course, judging from the Twitterverse, the hard part for many of those attendees is getting out of Kansas City and getting home. But we're going to have a full report in Monday's issue on the Winter Institute and all the big topics of discussion there, which, as you might guess, will include talk of the recent lawsuit that was filed by indie booksellers against Amazon. We spoke about that last week. They filed a lawsuit against Amazon and the Big Six over their use of DRM. But, you know, I'll just say this, that the general feeling at Winter Institute was that it was a pretty vibrant and a strong meeting, despite the weather, and only a few cancellations, except for the National Association of College Stores part of the agenda, which had to cancel a lot of its smaller sessions last Friday as the storm was really kind of hitting. But, you know, the show did go on, and again, you can check it out in Monday's issue.
Well, and there's still more twists, because we've learned that Len Riggio of Barnes & Noble wants to go Indy himself. He's making a bid for the B&N bookstore business.
What
can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm done being surprised by the news and publishing, but this one also caught me a little bit off guard. And that's right. You know, the big news that we reported this week was that Riggio, in a filing with the SEC, said that he has notified the company board that he plans to make an offer to acquire Barnes & Noble's retail trade stores. Now, that retail segment includes all brick-and-mortar stores, BarnesandNoble.com, and Sterling Publishing. You know, what's missing from that group? Why, the Nook, of course. The Nook Media Group houses all of the Nook digital devices and the Nook bookstores, as well as the college stores. Now, Riggio's proposal comes after B&N announced in January that sales of its digital devices were below expectations for the holidays and that its loss was going to be even with its loss of last year. But it had predicted a smaller loss, so that's not good news. Now, we've been covering the story since Riggio made the filing. It's all on our PW website, so you can go back and catch up on that if you haven't been reading about it so far. But also, Barnes & Noble also reported its third quarter results this week. And that may well shed more light on what's going on at the retailer and what's behind Riggio's plan. And we're going to have an article on that in Monday's issue, so you can check that out in Monday's issue, and also on the website if you want to read more about the news so far.
Well, indeed. And finally, not to be outdone, the libraries are also in the mix this week. You've got a critical look in a column about one library's groundbreaking ebook venture. Tell us about that.
That's right. In Monday's issue, we have the latest column from our contributing editor, Brian Kenny, who is the director at White Plains Public Library. He takes on a very, very hot topic, which is the ebook program being pioneered by Jamie LaRue at the Douglas County, Colorado Libraries. Now, if you'll recall our coverage from the American Library Association's midwinter meeting last January in Seattle, ebooks remain probably the most contested topic among public librarians. And it's not just what publishers are licensing to libraries or who's not licensing to libraries. It's also the chaotic pricing. You know, ebooks can be as much as, you know, $100 for an edition. So behind the acquisitions hoopla is this gnawing anxiety that prices are getting out of control and, of course, that libraries don't own the content that they are paying for. So into that fray rides Jamie LaRue at Douglas County with his much-discussed ebook strategy for libraries. And essentially, LaRue, with the blessing of his board and his pretty visionary staff, I have to say, have invested in the technology and software for the library to host its own ebook platform. And ownership of its ebooks is the bedrock of that platform. Now, today, the Douglas County Library spends about $700,000 a year on ebooks, but the vast majority of that only goes to publishers where they can actually buy and own the ebooks, and that's other publishers other than the big six, mostly from small and regional presses, as well as self-published titles through a recent deal with Smashwords. Now, I think we all, and I'm certainly among this group, admire LaRue. We see him as a pretty inspiring thinker and also action-oriented because he actually got this thing up and off the ground. But from the perspective of a library director, which Brian Kenny is, the question is, can this model succeed? And to support its idealistic ebook strategy, DCL been basically reduced to acquiring books that, frankly, are going to interest very few readers? You know, not to disparage the offerings of small presses or the value of their publications, which, you know, Monday's issue sings the praises of, but it is unusual for a public library, Brian writes, to fill its catalog with material that the public hasn't requested and that likely seems like it's going to provide a very limited return on investment. So Brian raises a number of questions about the DCL model, and the biggest nagging question, of course, that he has is, does anyone in Douglas County want to borrow the stuff that it's buying? You know, can the library strike a blow for a more library-friendly digital future by redirecting patron demand now into these new books, the ones that are playing friendly with libraries? If patrons come to the library to, say, borrow the new Steve Jobs bio and they can't get it, are they going to be satisfied with different Steve Jobs books from smaller publishers? You know, it's an open question. I know it's a great column that raises a lot of issues, and primarily among them is whether or not the DCL model can work outside of Douglas County or whether it's going to work in Douglas County. So we look forward to seeing how that's going to turn out, and you can check out Brian's column in Monday's issue.
Well, we'll definitely do that because, you know, it really is a fascinating question. Quantity and quality kind of come in there, and also it's not a question that we can answer today, because the emergence of the independent publishing sector is only going to grow, and presumably the quality within it is going to grow.
Absolutely. We have a lot of converging storylines all coming together in the DCL model. And the question is the revolution that's underway in publishing going to happen quickly enough to allow Jamie LaRue's model to succeed?
And you're absolutely right, Andrew, because I think that one of the areas of the marketplace that's still catching up with all the change is the readers. And they'll be the ones who decide whether that works or it doesn't. Thank you, as always, Andrew Albany, Senior Writer for Publishers Weekly. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.